You're listening to the Stone Tapes on Siren 107.3 FM with Sam Stone and friends.
Feel It Still by Portugal the Man, and you're listening to the Stone Tapes. I'm Sam Stone, and in the studio we have two guest hosts today, and we have with us Charlotte March. Hello, Charlotte.
Hello, how are you doing?
We're good, thank you. Good to have you here. And we also have guest host singer-songwriter Lindsay Gold.
I think the power's rushing to my head. I can't handle this responsibility.
Well, we'll see how you get on, Lindsay. Also on the phone joining us today is Robin Pierce. Hi, Robin. How are you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, super. Glad to have you on. And later on, we'll have Patricia H. Ash joining us as usual. So what is happening this month? Well, Robin, what have you been reviewing?
Well, I've had a couple of interesting trips to the cinema. The best film I've seen was Ready Player One, but I reckon that everybody and his brother is reviewing that one. So I'm going with my second favourite film of the month, which is A Quiet Place. Have you heard of this one?
I haven't. Tell us more.
It's so low-key, it's almost underground. Emily Blunt stars. It's an American-made film. Effects by Industrial Light and Magic, so they must have had a considerable budget, being that they charge upwards of $1 million a second of screen time. We don't really know what's happened before the film starts, but we can piece it together. And this is what makes it as original a film and as groundbreaking a movie, I would say, as Night of the Living Dead was back in 1968. Yeah. You have a family creeping around rural America. They've got a homemade sand path. They're not making a noise. They daren't make a sound. What it is, as far as we're aware, but this is all background detail that you actually see in the background. Some sort of like insect life has come to Earth, about human size, maybe a bit taller, extremely carnivorous. We are on the menu. They basically home in on sound, and they've already got most of humanity. It's like a Thanks, Lindsay.
Welcome, Boo.
Post-apocalyptic nightmare. They are living on a farm, and they can't make a sound. Fortunately, one of the kids... Oh, I don't mean to say fortunately. Lucky for that. No, I don't mean to say lucky for... One of their kids is deaf. So she's used to, you know, sign language and that kind of thing, which is how they have to communicate. But it's also an important plot point that she never knows that one of these creatures is behind her.
Ah, interesting.
And she does hold kind of a key to an eventual solution, but that's all I'm going to go on that for you. But most of the film takes place on possibly the worst ever night that these people can ever have. The kids have gone off. The father's frantically looking for them. And the mother's water breaks, and she has to give birth in a house which contains a couple of these insects on the prowl without making a single sound.
That'll do it.
That's brutal.
That is brutal.
And
it's so tense. They don't go to the cheap extreme of making a loud, you know, blast of music, like nonsense like The Conjuring and... But you hear a noise and you are jumping out of your seat because you're so into the movie. The only bad thing about it is there's next to absolutely no soundtrack at all, next to no dialogue. If you've got the kind of OCD that I've got, the sound of other people crunching popcorn will drive you nuts. Mm. Why can't people eat quietly at the cinema?
Why can't they be real, those insects, for 1 second to eat those people?
Oh, dear.
But see, here's the thing. In the cinema chain that I go to, they have been using clips from the film to advise people to switch off their phones and stop talking.
Oh, that's great.
Where you see this noisy family and they are snatched away by the insects.
You know,
I like it.
Worked so well.
I like it.
I'd never actually, I knew A Quiet Place was getting good reviews and I'd never actually looked into it, which is a bit embarrassing for me, given how much I love horror, but I'm now completely invested in going and seeing it.
And it's interesting, Robin, because the minute you said Emily Blunt, I was listening to the radio, a radio channel, I won't say which one, recently, as I was travelling to Wales, and I heard her being interviewed partly about this, and I picked up only half of the interview, so I was kind of not sure what the film was called, but I did pick up that it is her husband, isn't it, that's either the director or producer?
That is correct.
Right.
Yeah, it's John Krasinski, I think, who was in The
Office. And I believe he's also her husband in the film.
Right. So he's in it as well. So he's
actor, producer, director. To this film, the worst thing they could do is start off a franchise where next time we'll see the insects in a city or,
Resident Evil.
And, you know, we don't need that.
Let's leave it as a one-off.
But you know it's going to come. You know, it'll be, you know...
I do. They'll
do it to death, but...
I do.
This is an original film.
From what I've heard, the main theme has really nothing to do with the horror. It's more about family. I mean, like you said, Emily
Blunt
and
her family.
Husband. Yeah.
Their struggle to keep alive. Their struggle to come to terms to a tragedy that they undergo. And even though they appear at times dysfunctional, like most families, the fact that they come together and they will even make the ultimate sacrifice when needed, it is more of a family sticking together against absolutely horrendous circumstances. Mm. And it's such a strong film. I would urge anybody to see it.
It's going on the reading list. Reading
yeah.
list?
Viewing list. Yeah, me yeah. too.
Well, you can read it too.
I'll put
probably.
Subtitles on, but there won't be much to read.
What's, yeah. What sort of mark out of 10 would you give this, Robin?
I would give this an 8.5.
That's a good solid mark.
Yeah, it is a good solid mark and well deserved.
Oh, fantastic.
Sorry, I just visualised a subtitle that just says screams in sign language.
Oh, one thing I was thinking about when you mentioned these insect-like human-sized creatures was Mimic. A little
oh,
bit.
Yeah, which we mentioned last month.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting, because we did. We covered that last month, didn't we? And it was... So it does... Did that need an introduction at all, or a back intro? That was a Fun Boy 3. Our lips are sealed. And now it's the time of In This Month. Unfortunately, we have no George Mann with us this time, so you're going to have to put up with me doing this for you. So, April the 6th, 1968. Now, put that date in your mind. What do you think was in theatres at that point? Anybody? Any
Space
guesses?
Odyssey,
well,
surely?
I can tell you because I can.
Ed, you're right. It was.
Well, I have it.
It was indeed.
In front
of
me, but...
We may have a cheat sheet.
We do have a little bit of a cheat sheet here.
I completely failed to get into the cinema to see that. I was 8. I was outraged. Outraged, I say.
Do you...
I'm not sure. No, actually, 1968. Yes, I wasn't quite around then.
I think you should have tried standing on the shoulders of another child in a trench coat. I hear that works.
Yeah, the oldies are the goodies.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's its 50th anniversary then at the moment. 50 years ago. That's amazing, isn't it? Because this is something that also seems quite current still. I don't know why, Space Odyssey.
Well,
has anybody watched it recently, though?
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing my essay about it. And it's very monomyth, if you know what I mean. It is literally... about being an object in space as a human being. Kubrick, as you know, he had his background in photography, so he kind of wanted to sever the third eye, as it were, in order to transcend. That sounds a bit awful. But the music, you know, is getting to me. It's like a lot.
It's epic, man. It's epic.
Yeah,
it is.
Just to have one mode of perception helps you see so many. It's like a microscope on the human condition, as it were.
Well, it's,
you
know, beautifully shot.
Hurtling forward.
So absolutely.
Claustrophobic at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, it's not my ideal situation.
No, I wouldn't recommend.
Mine neither. Well, going back also another 50 years... London Bridge was sold to an American entrepreneur called Robert P. McCulloch, and it was for $1 million, $29,000. And he went to rebuilt it at Lake Havasu in Arizona, and that was on the 18th of April 1968. Now, I didn't realise that London Bridge, wasn't there a rumor around this where the guy thought he was buying something else and he ended up with London Bridge, or is that some other story I'm thinking of?
Tower Bridge,
that's right.
There are a lot of bridges in London, so I mean, he's so bound to like, hit one.
You can have that one, but you can't have that one. What do you think that was? 50 years again? Because I thought that was longer ago, actually. Maybe it's one of those urban myths that I've heard so many times that it seems like it's forever ago. And then the 60th anniversary is BBC Radiophonic Workshops was created. And they, obviously, were the people who invented Dr. Hinkley. There we go. And that was on the 1st of April 1958. Of course, that wasn't when they wrote that theme, because Doctor Who was it 1964? 63, that's it. You know your stuff, Robin. David would have me for not knowing that, because I should really know that. And we go about 70th anniversary is Roundtree's introduced Polo Mints. Mm. And that was the 15th of April in 1948. So that was quite a moment. Has everybody here had Polo Mints?
Of course.
It's iconic. I want the bit in the middle. They used to sell those, didn't they?
What, really? Like little
they actually said there was. They created some. And, of course, April. What do you think April 1934 would be famous for, 84 years ago? Any ideas? Well, I'll give you a clue. A certain monster was allegedly photographed by a surgeon called R.K. Wilson. And this is somewhere in Scotland.
Nessie!
Yes, Nessie! And, finally, 104th... 4 years ago, showing of the first colour feature film in Britain, The World, The Flesh and the Devil. And that was on the 9th of April 1914. So that's quite amazing.
Wow.
I fell asleep amid the flowers for a couple of hours on a beautiful day.
You, a stab in your shoulder,
And that was L'Amour Pan by the lovely Lindsay Gold, our co-host today. Ah, that is beautiful, Lindsay. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I did it all live here myself right now.
And Charlotte will testify that that's true.
It's on the synth.
Robin, I think you had another surprise in this month for us, didn't you, as well?
I did. The world's most powerful octogenarian. And I'm as amazed as anybody that I said that without a hitch.
I'm surprised I heard it today.
80 years ago to this very week, Action Comics number 1 hit the newsstands, published by DC Comics, and featured the very first appearance of Jerry Shuster and Joe Siegel's amazing creation, which carries on to this day, Superman.
Wow, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yep.
To think that he's been around that long.
The issue was dated June, but due to the vagaries of the publishing world, it hit the newsstands 80 years ago this very week.
That's fantastic. And now we say a cheery goodbye to Robin and North Wales, and we'll speak to you next month. Thanks so much, Robin.
So long. Have a great rest of the show. Bye.
Bye.
The incantations I read run past my eyes. They weigh down my tongue as I speak. I visualize, I give.
And that was also Strange Beauty by the lovely Lindsay. And Lindsay, this was the theme tune for a particular new spin-off drama, wasn't it, for Doctor Who?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, it was. It was The White Witch of Devil's End.
Right, The White Witch of Devil's End, you know, a little bit of a plug here because I was involved in writing it for disclosure reasons. It was actually on the box set called The Demons of Devil's End, distributed by Koch Media last November. And Lindsay's theme has been getting quite a lot of interest from Doctor Who fans all over the place recently. I believe you even got some fan mail.
Really?
Wait, what?
You didn't get the fan mail I forwarded on to you then?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
I got fan mail?
You got fan mail from a gentleman in Australia. I'll have to forward that on to you another time.
Oh, no. I've been living under a rock. I'm so sorry.
Charlotte, is there anything you'd like to know about the song and the idea behind it? Or?
You were talking about how you don't really know about the demons, which is not a bad thing, but what was your process in writing the song? Did you
it was a happy accident, because I wrote the song before this came to fruition, and it resonated with the theme of the show and of Olive, and it became like, you know, the theme to that accidentally. I'm sorry, I just don't even know what I'm doing right now with my life. It was kind of an accident, because it was actually based off a dream I had. I had a weird video game kind of dream, like a real-time strategy game dream, where I was this priestess piece in this game, and I sacrificed myself and married a god by sacrificing my physical form. And that is literally what that song was about. But then it just happened to work with Olive as well at the same time. So, yeah, it was a happy accident, but a good accident.
It works really well. And I'd like to welcome Patricia H. Ash, who's joined us on the telephone. Hi, Patricia.
Hello.
Hello. Hi, lovely to hear your voice. Oh, we've got a time delay.
Sorry, I thought there was going to be more of that.
Yay!
Hi!
Patricia in the studio today. We've got Charlotte March, and we have, of course, Lindsay Gold, and our producer, Alex Levchuk, making sure everything works properly. Unfortunately, not us. We all need a bit of prodding. It's quite a girl-heavy show this month, so how are you, Patricia?
I'm pretty good.
And we've
pretty
got...
good. I expect there to be thunderstorms in Texas any minute now.
Oh, really? Oh, we've got lovely weather here.
Clouds just looming all day. Well, you'll get this in like a couple of weeks, I think.
Yeah, it'll certainly catch up with us at some point, won't it? We've got really nice weather tonight, so it's beautiful. Tell us what you are reviewing this time.
I am reviewing Siren. It's a show that I found on Hulu. There was a advertisement, and there was a carnivorous mermaid, and I was like, ooh, this looks interesting. Carnivorous mermaid?
Wow.
Mermaids that eat... Well, she hasn't eaten any person yet, but the description in Hulu says that it's 10 episodes long, and there have only been 4 released.
Right.
So I have no idea what's going to happen next, and that's really exciting. No, well...
In that there's a delay, she only gets to eat somebody at the end of it.
I love that bit of Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah.
So what's the basic storyline so far? Just say, give us a without too many spoilers.
So far, hopefully without too many spoilers, there are some fishermen, and they're out at sea fishing, and they catch a mermaid. Well, they catch a thing, and they're not really sure what it is because it's dark and it's raining, and it moves fast, and it injures one of the fishermen. So they radio back to the Coast Guard for help, and what comes out isn't the Coast Guard. It's a secret military helicopter. And the secret military organization takes both the mermaid and the injured sailor.
Oh, so, interesting.
Yeah, the fishermen think, okay, great, he's gone to have some medical treatment. We'll just catch up with him when we get back. What do you mean he's missing?
Oh, interesting.
So the fishermen are looking for him, and then turns out that mermaid wasn't alone. That mermaid had a sister, and the sister comes looking for her. And in Siren, they can shed their tails for a little bit and walk around on land, being extremely strange, very creepy. I really enjoy the performance the actress of this main mermaid gives, because she is disturbing, and she looks like an adorable little girl, but she's really like a tiger. It's a tiger in a woman's suit.
That's even more disturbing then, isn't it?
Oh,
yeah.
So we don't get that endearing moment where Ariel gets her legs and she's like, ah, and then Sebastian and Flounder are there, and it's all happy, happy, good times.
No, it's much, much darker. So much darker.
I'm so excited to see this, because it's actually been advertised now. I think it's on Sci-Fi.
We saw the trailer the other day.
Yeah, we saw the trailer the other day, and it's going to be on in a few weeks' time in England. And it's on.
Yay!
We've got it on record. We're definitely going to be watching it. So we'll have another chat about it then when we do. But what your thoughts so far, marks out of 10?
I give it 8 out of 10.
That's a good solid.
There were some things that I was able to predict. I was like, oh, yes. The girl, she's a mermaid, and she's looking for her sister. Yeah, that we knew that was going to happen. That was in the trailer. And some of the characters' choices are kind of easy to predict, but then there's also a lot of things that I don't know where they're going. Like, one of the main characters is named Ben. He's a marine biologist, and his family has some sort of secret lore.
Oh.
Associated with mermaids. They own most of the town, probably, and they have a bunch of secrets. And I think maybe they're working with the military government agency. Maybe they're not. Maybe they've got their whole other thing going on.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe he's some kind of future love interest.
Well, with a name like Finn, you'd think they'd be working for the mermaids.
With a name like Finn, that's a good point.
Yeah. Well, he's got a girlfriend already.
Is she called Shelley?
Sorry. No, her name's Maddie.
Aww.
And she is the daughter of the sheriff who's investigating this murder, where what happened was, a guy tried to sexually assault the mermaid. That did not go well for him. He's dead.
I bet it didn't.
I wouldn't recommend that.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend that.
No.
It's very creepy, the idea of that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, keeping on the mermaid theme, there are a lot of films and TV shows about mermaids, aren't there? I mean, one of my all-time favourites is Splash, obviously, with Tom Hanks and Daryl Hannah.
I love that movie.
That's like a duvet day movie to me. If I'm feeling, you know, a bit under the weather, I'd just love to sit and watch that. I just adore that film.
Yeah, we used to love that a lot,
It is sweet, isn't it? And I think it was very well done. They did Splash 2, but I never saw that one.
I think I saw a bit and I wasn't keen.
You weren't impressed?
No.
Are there any others that you're thinking of, Patricia, or even Charlotte, that you have seen, that you liked, disliked?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind, obviously, is Disney's The Little Mermaid. That was the first movie that I ever saw in theaters.
I think that's subliminal.
Yeah.
I think I saw Aquamarine as well, but I'm trying to think of the premise of that, and I can't.
It's pretty much Splash, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty much Splash, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, I used to love H2O Just Add Water, which was Nickelodeon, wasn't it?
This,
in Australia.
This is what I was going to talk about today on the podcast.
This is the accent!
I said I'm going to be doing some questionable Australian accents today, and my time has come.
Yes.
So, we watched H2O.
We've watched about 3 episodes.
On Netflix.
Oh, I used to love it.
We couldn't believe what we were watching.
It's so bad, it's good.
Yes.
It's like everyone in the cast is dead inside. So you have these 3 girls. Two of them have very strange, intense lesbian undertones going on, which I don't think they were trying to intentionally do on a children's show. But
no, there is an awful lot of intense expression.
It looks
at each other, it's just very strange.
So they get stranded on an island. Because one of them went to help a guy, a rich kid, with his boat, and then he pushed the boat out to sea, and he was like, and she was like, I don't understand, why have you done this, Zane? And he was like,
Because I could, basically. And he was like, I can just buy another one. And he just, like, doesn't care. So she's like, Zane, wah. And then they go get stranded on an island, and then the moon comes out, and they are mermaids now. That is the logic there. And then because the
boat gets
picked up by the police, Zane is like, well, you've done that now, and you've brought a lot of bad attention on me, so I'm going to get you for that, basically. And then it just escalates from there, and it is so good and so bad. And I just love, one of my favourite things about it is that these three girls are 17 in real life when they film this, but they look younger, they're kind of gearing for about 14, 15. But there's like a discrepancy between them and some of the other kids in class. One of them is like washed up 30-something year old looking.
Crow's feet or...
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, dear.
She looks like she's dying. Like it's so
No.
It's amazing. And then there's just this really sociopathic rich kid who's just like, you got me wet because you opened a fire hydrant on me, so now I'm gonna throw you in the pool. Yeah, because I can, I'm rich. And it's just a really weird show, but in the best kind of way. 10 out of 10.
I'm not sure I'll be revisiting it again anytime
I will I'll be there.
Oh, I definitely will. You're the second person I've heard about that from.
They've also done another one called Mako Mermaids, which is
Mako
Mermaid, which is a spin-off of this particular show. But an interesting fact here is I spotted Claire Holt in there, who's in the originals, and the other girl who plays Hayley, but I can't remember, she's also one of the mermaids.
Yeah.
So they obviously started their acting career at the same time. They're both Australian. 17 and 18 they both are, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
And the interesting thing about that is that acting is definitely a lot better in the originals.
They are so wooden.
It's so cool.
You said you watched it growing up on Nickelodeon, Charlotte.
What
was your thoughts on H2O then and now?
Well, I didn't have much taste, and I still don't have much taste, so I think it really influenced me.
I think the type of programme that it is, it does depend on what age group you are watching it.
Mm.
So what age were you when you were watching it?
Oh, I'd say 8 or 9.
Right, so you're the perfect demographic.
I wanted to be a mermaid, you know?
Yeah.
I think you're the perfect demographic for that show, because Lindsay and I were trying to work out what age group it was aimed at, even though it was teenage girls, where I think they were supposed to be about 14, 15. But it's always younger girls.
I'll have to revisit
to the older
it.
Ones.
I mean, you watched it from your context.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll be funny to
yeah,
watch it again.
I mean,
again, now as an adult.
The popular
yeah,
girl in class who looks like a 30-year-old rich mom who had a kid too early. And yeah, she's in a pink dress. She's dead behind the eyes. It's amazing.
Now...
Tune in to Siren.
You're listening to Siren. This is 107.3 FM.
And this is the doctor telling you, so you must do it.
Exterminate!
Hi, this is Chase Masterson, and you're listening to Sam Stone and Friends with the Stone Tapes on Siren FM.
Oh, wow. I love talking about mermaids. I think it's brilliant. And while we were talking about conventions, Alex, I think you've got some information.
Conventional mermaids. Mermaids and conventions and so on. It's just that we found a little golden nugget of conventions, which actually one of Robin Pierce's colleagues at Starburst magazine introduced us to about 3 years ago now. That was Ed Fortune. And it's actually Sci-Fi Scarborough, scifiscarborough.co.uk. We do like to geek beside the seaside. And Steve Dickinson has actually worked wonders. This is the fifth Sci-Fi Scarborough. And as you know, Sam, I'm consistently saying you should get up there.
I'd love to. I don't know why I haven't yet. I mean, obviously, recently I was at Gallifrey in February. Gallifrey One convention was the Doctor Who convention. And then very, very recently, we just did the Sci-Fi Weekender over in North Wales, which was wonderful. Great fun. I was going to talk about this at great length with George Mann, who'd not done Sci-Fi Weekender, but unfortunately he's not able to be with us today. But
he's writing 11,000 words.
Nice to give a new event a plug. So Sci-Fi Scarborough.
And let's not forget as well, whilst we're talking about upcoming events, there's also the 18th Sci-Fi London Film Festival, which launches May the 1st to May the 7th. With, of course, the classic Sci-Fido, a competition for cosplay for dogs and canines.
Really?
Nothing more. Exactly.
It doesn't get any more surreal than that.
I feel as though my moment has actually passed. I shall fade my microphone down.
And now we've got a little bit of more Lindsay Gold. And because it's such a beautiful day, I think we're going to revisit through June. Because I think summer's here. That song that makes me feel very summery. Oh, Patricia, so staying on the theme of mermaids, have you seen Killer Mermaids?
No, but I want to. It sounds right up my alley.
Well, I'll give you a little bit of a rundown of what it's about. This is the blurb. So it also is known as Nymph Mamula Killer Mermaid, which all sounds a bit strange. The version I've seen is Killer Mermaid, but of course, when you look for it on IMDb, it's actually under Nymph. So two friends travel to Montenegro on vacation to visit an old friend who offers to take them to Mamula, an abandoned military fortress, which is located on a remote island. As the group explore the island, they soon discover that they are not alone when they are hunted by a fisherman who will stop at nothing to protect the island's secret. And this film, generally speaking, I think it's quite a good one. What we discover without too many spoilers here is that there is definitely some kind of siren that is drawing in victims. We have sequences of this fisherman attacking people. He's a bit of a... It looks like he's a serial killer, to be honest. But we don't know his motivation at first, which we learn later on. And it has some great stars in it. One of them is... it's directed by Milan Todorovic. And he's apparently known for a lot more torture porn type of films, but he reins it in a little bit in this one.
It's only a little, though.
Only a little.
Milan Todorovic.
Thank you, Alex.
Getting in touch with my inner Bela Lugosi.
Yes, thank you so much. And it stars also Christina Klebe, and she was in Halloween. Natalie Byrne, who was in The Expendables 3. And Franco Nero was in Django Unchained, and he was also the original Django.
Yeah, does a cameo in Django Unchained.
Absolutely. But one of the things I knew him from was the old musical called Camelot, where he played Lancelot. He was. And
C'est moi.
C'est moi. And he also did something I saw growing up, which had quite an impact on me. It was called The Virgin and the Gypsy. And you can imagine what kind of programme that was.
Sounds a bit
It was
raunchy.
Very much about a posh girl getting seduced by a gypsy.
Well,
sounds
good to me.
But it was an interesting film. Lindsay, you saw this with me. What was your thoughts about it?
Nowhere near as positive as yours. Franco Nero, I think he's having some dark times. There's dark days. It's not a well-written film particularly. I'm not that keen on it. In fact, I only got invested towards the end when the mermaid appears and she has a moment where she's really creepy, but then there's like this whole love story between her and the fisherman.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, I'm invested in this now. Monsters with feelings. I like this. But before that, up till then, it was just Kelly and Lucy and some random guy called Bobbin just running around on this abandoned island and like getting chased by fishermen. And it didn't capture my interest much, I have to say.
I don't think they had a lot of money in this film, shall we say. It was quite low budget in that sense.
The mermaid effects were good.
The mermaid effects were brilliant. I think that's probably where most of the budget went.
I think so too, yeah.
You haven't seen this, have you, Charlotte?
I'm afraid not. It sounds interesting, definitely.
It is on Netflix. That's where we saw it. But, of course, other downstreaming services do exist as well. Have to add that one in. But, yes, and it is. I actually quite enjoy it. It is a fun film, and I don't think it's quite as weak as Lindsay says, she does. I don't quite agree with you on that.
It's just something that doesn't personally appeal to me.
When was it made?
Yeah. I shall tell you now. It was made in...
Is it kind of modern, or is it old? Or
no, it's not that old. I know when it was, because I looked it up. It's 2015.
Okay, yeah.
So it's only 3 years ago. And in fact, I think Franco Nero is excellent in it.
Oh, he was great.
I think he's the money shot, really. He's the one who's got the great acting ability in the whole thing, and he's really good.
Yeah.
Very convincing.
He was definitely the backbone of the film, I think.
Even though he's not on it that much, you know.
He carried it. He was really engaging on screen, but it's just a testament to him as an actor, really.
So a mark out of 10, Lindsay?
I'll give it a 5 for Franco Nero. But it's just not the type of film that generally appeals to me. If there'd been more monster stuff in that, I'll throw in like a half point for the monster love. If there'd been more of that peppered throughout the entire thing, I would have been so into that.
You might well have been more engaged with the fisherman, but I think that was the point, was that he just seemed to be like a psycho, and in the end it was all for love. But I'm going to give it a 6, because I agree it's not the best film ever. But yeah, worth a look.
Even with Scylla the Nymph, portrayed by Zorana Kostic-Obradovic.
Yes, she was actually
a beautiful woman.
Silent. She was very beautiful. She didn't have a speech.
It wasn't surprise, Scylla. No. Sorry, that was the David J. Howe joke that I normally put in. Scylla the Nymph, surprise.
Scylla the Nymph.
I'll close my microphone.
Anyway, I think that's all we've got time for today. Thank you for listening to the Stone Tapes. Thanks so much to Patricia H. Ash. Patricia, bye.
Yep.
Robin Pierce, who can't say goodbye because he's already gone. To Charlotte March for joining us. Lindsay Gold.
Bye-bye.
And, of course, Alex Lefchuk. And I am Sam Stone. And thank you. Goodbye.
More monster love.
Let's... Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Dream again, for now I find a
face, draw back in fear. I am the mask you wear.
It's me they hear.
My spirit and my voice in one combined. The phantom of the opera is there.
Homage to you.